Chapter 2
Mr. Skippy, Hans Chotek said slowly while giving our AI's avatar the side eye, I do appreciate that restoring your full functioning is now our top priority, particularly as, he nodded toward me, our last mission was successful in sparking a Kristang civil war, and the Kristang will not be a threat to Earth for the foreseeable future. However, I believe before we embark on a mission to repair your mechanism, we should go to Earth. There we... No. And hell no. Skippy's avatar crossed its arms defiantly. Allow me to finish, please, Chotek replied with a scowl. At Earth, we can take on additional supplies, new personnel. Let me stop you right there, Chalky. When I said no, I did not mean I am against the idea of going to Earth. Hey, who wouldn't simply love to visit the monkey-infested mudball you call home? What I meant is, we can't go to Earth. Chotek looked at me accusingly. Mr. Skippy, you reported being confident you could repair the jump drive when two of our reactors are functioning adequately. He glanced at the status report on his tablet. Skippy was in the process of bringing Reactor 3 back to full normal power, allowing us to restore artificial gravity to the Earth normal setting. Reactor 1 would be held in reserve until we needed it to power the jump drive. The long trip back to Earth might cause additional strain on our jump drive coils. However, I believe...
Shh!
Skippy shushed our mission commander, his avatar holding up a finger. It was an index finger and not the other one-finger gesture. We can't go back to Earth because I can't reopen the wormhole that leads to your home world. Why not? Chotek shot another annoyed look at me, which I thought was unfair. The Elder Wormhole Controller Module, the device Colonel Bishop refers to as a magic beanstalk, is functional, correct? Skippy sighed. Yes, the beanstalk is working perfectly. The problem is I can't use it. Accessing the beanstalk controls and providing power to do it requires me to route my commands through another dimension of space-time. Trapped behind the firewall as I am now, I can't extend myself beyond local space-time.
Whoa! Whoa, I interjected.
Hold on there, partner. On our second mission when we got stranded on Newark, you told me that after you found the Collective and left us, we could use the beanstalk by ourselves one time to temporarily reopen that wormhole for us to go home. Now you're telling us that was all bullshit?
Damn, Skippy grumbled. The monkey's onto my line of bullshit.
Joe, listen, that is not exactly true. Now it was my turn to cross my arms. Enlighten me, oh great one, I said acidly. My plan after I contacted the Collective was to preload instructions into the beanstalk and feed power into it. The power would drain away rapidly, but it's possible the beanstalk could have enough power left when you reached the wormhole. Unlikely, but hey, the odds were totally against you flying the ship back to the wormhole by yourselves anyway, so screw it. As you have seen, you can't operate the jump drive without me. I figured all you monkeys needed was some slim fantasy of getting back home, right? Crap. He was right about that. He had warned me many times that we couldn't fly the Dutchman back to the wormhole by ourselves. A recent failure to operate the jump drive had demonstrated how correct he was about that. Turning to Chotek, I said, Sir, we will investigate whether there is an alternative method of using the wormhole controller module. For now, we have to assume our access to Earth is blocked.
Yep, Skippy said cheerily, his ridiculously giant hat bobbing as he nodded.
There's a second reason we can't go back to Earth. We don't have time. I'm operating on a deadline. The firewall I constructed takes enormous power. Maintaining it is draining my internal power reserves. Basically, I created a very localized space-time rift that the worm can't cross. As soon as my internal power falls below a critical level, the rift I created will seal and the worm will break through. The clock is ticking down to 0 hour for me, so... His avatar let out a long breath. That's the full truth of it right there. I'm facing certain death, and I need the merry band of pirates to pull me out of this mess.
Thank you, Skippy, I replied quietly. It took a lot of courage to admit you were vulnerable. Of course you monkeys are totally screwed if the wormhole gets me, so let's stop wasting time with this blah 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 and get moving.
Huh?
I winced. Damn it, even when he was only a ghost of his awesome self, he was awesomely an asshole. Sir, I looked at Chotek again. I did not know about the problem of reopening a wormhole. I hadn't known because I hadn't asked. Running back to Earth before we fixed Skippy wasn't an option I wanted Chotek to consider. I did know he was working on a deadline. He explained it to me. We need to help Skippy fix himself before we can go to Earth or do anything else. After the meeting, I walked with Dr. Friedlander back to the science lab, more to avoid Hans Chotek than because I needed a nerdy science lecture, but partly because I wanted to know why our science team had not been able to make our jump drive work. While we walked, I asked Skippy that question, holding my Z-phone in front of me on speaker mode. Joe, this is why I said you monkeys should never screw with things you don't understand. It should have worked, right? I pressed him for answers. Separating the drive coils into disposable packages and using one package for each jump. Kristang ships do that and it works for them, I said as I walked into the science lab and waved at Friedlander. That's because Kristang ships are designed to use isolated packages of jump drive coils, Joe. Theranin star carriers are designed differently. A star carrier has to jump while carrying multiple, very massive warships. A star carrier has to do that over and over without constant downtime for heavy maintenance. For that reason, all the drive coils of a star carrier are set up to work together. Even the backup coils are tuned to the active coils using a quantum-level linking effect. As Skippy said that, Friedlander's eyes grew wide. Is the... Friedlander began to say. Doctor, please... I waved a hand to interrupt him. You will have plenty of time to pester Skippy with endless specific questions while he works to repair the jump drive. Skippy, are you telling me we never had a chance to make the jump drive work without you? Yes, Joe, that is what I'm saying. I told you that over and over, and you didn't listen to me. The science team did have a good idea. It just wasn't going to work on this type of ship. Or any Theranin ship. Great. Dr. Friedlander... Skippy needs 3 days to repair the jump drive. At least 3 days, Joe, Skippy insisted. You jokers seriously hosed up the drive coils. I need to sort through them to see how many are still usable. Got it. Can you please let the science team know what you are doing so they can follow, maybe learn something? Pretty please? You didn't say with sugar on it. Okay, fine. Fine. I will work with a bunch of ignorant monkeys looking over my shoulder. That will only make the task take, like, twice, 3 times as long as it should. Friedlander, before we start, you owe me a good joke. Skippy, we don't have time, I started to protest. Joe, I am looking at 3 days of constantly being pestered by stupid questions from monkeys. After 1 day, I am going to begin thinking fondly of my friend the worm and long for a peaceful death, so throw me a bone, please. Doctor, I shrugged. Friedlander looked stricken, then got thoughtful. Okay, a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead were standing on an island, and the nearest civilization was 50 miles away. The redhead swam 15 miles, got too tired to swim anymore, and drowned. The brunette swam 20 miles, got too tired to swim anymore, and drowned. The blonde swam 25 miles, got tired, and swam back to the island.
That's good.
Skippy was delighted. 2 hours later, I was in my office trying to think up an alternative to us jumping into an inhabited Wargalan star system because I knew Hans Chotek expected me to miraculously find a better way out of our predicament. To help me concentrate, I was listening to some New Age-type music that Adams played during yoga classes and playing solitaire on my laptop. A sound at the edge of my hearing kept distracting me. I paused the music, listened intently, but heard nothing. It was annoying. I thought of asking Skippy whether there was a problem with the ship's 1MC intercom system, but figured he needed to use his diminished processing power to fix the jump drive. Then I heard it again, and this time I wasn't able to ignore it. Using the handy controls Skippy had installed on my laptop, I cranked up the speaker volume and heard Skippy speaking very faintly. Stupid monkeys. Why do I have to explain every freaking thing to them? They don't understand anything I say anyway. And, oh, damn, they smell awful! Woo! My laundry bots are offline for a short time and the whole ship smells like a locker room. A locker room with piles of dirty clothes and wet towels that have been sitting on the floor for way too long. Oh, I hate my life. Why didn't I just...
Skippy! I shouted. Or tried to shout, because I was laughing so hard my sides hurt.
You're talking to yourself.
What? He said at full volume.
I am not, Joe.
Are too.
Are not.
You just said the ship smells like a locker room with piles of dirty clothes and wet towels that have been sitting on the floor, I chided him gently.
Well, shit.
Hey, I told you my cognitive functions are slightly degraded. I might have lost track of which thoughts I vocalize.
Nagatha!
I am here, dear, her soft voice said soothingly.
Since you're not doing anything else around here, your job now is to warn me when I am talking aloud to myself.
Yes, dear, she giggled. You certainly do not want the crew knowing your important private thoughts.
No, I do not. Joe, go back to whatever you are wasting your time with. I'm busy picking up pieces of the jump drive.
The peace and quiet aboard the ship lasted less than half an hour before Skippy's voice fairly boomed out of every speaker aboard the ship. I quickly squelched the speaker in my office and could clearly hear his voice coming from the passageway outside. This time he was singing to himself.
Maybe I hang around me a little more than I should, but hey, there is no better place to go. And I got something to tell me that I always thought I would, and I believe I really ought to know. I love me. I honestly love me.
He paused.
I'm not trying.
Skippy!
I was laughing so hard I could barely talk, so I slapped a hand on the table.
You are singing to yourself!
Singing? No way, dude. I was... Oh, crap. You heard that?
Uh-huh, yeah. My mother liked that song, but I do not think those are the original lyrics.
I improvised, Joe. Nagatha! He roared.
Yes, dear?
She asked innocently. You were supposed to warn me when I was talking to myself.
I am sorry, dear. You were singing, not talking. I thought you were entertaining the crew. I did wonder why you weren't waiting until karaoke night.
From now on, Skippy fumed, I will tell you ahead of time when I plan to entertain the monkeys. You got that?
Skippy, dear, we talked about you calling the crew monkeys,
she admonished in her best schoolteacher tone.
We did talk about it, and you have nagged me to death about it. And I told you I would think about it. The way these ignorant apes screwed up my precious jump drive does not make me feel particularly respectful toward them.
Tisk, tisk,
Nagatha expressed her disapproval.
The humans would not have been screwing with the jump drive if you had not gone poking your nose into places better left alone. Curiosity killed the cat, Skippy. At least the cat didn't take the entire crew down with it.
Skippy let out a long, disgusted, world-weary sigh. See, Joe? See what I have to put up with?
I don't know what your problem is, Skippy. I threw him under the bus. I like her.
You would. Nagatha, no singing to myself, understood? It is highly embarrassing.
Yes, dear.
She almost chuckled with amusement.
In the gym that morning, Sergeant Adams had taught a yoga aerobics martial arts ballet class that I am sure she totally made up. All I know is she dared me to join the class, and I regretted letting her taunt me into it. I should have known better. Two Spec Ops soldiers were on temporary light duty because they had injured themselves in Adams's torture class. That is one problem with hyper-competitive special operations troops. If one of them does something stupid, the rest all want to prove they can do something ever stupider. Anyway, my arms were shaking and my legs felt like rubber, and I had aches in places I didn't know had muscles. My hips apparently needed a lot of work. Adams consoled me by saying many people don't properly engage their hip muscles, and she threatened me by saying I needed to join her class 3 times a week. Right then, whether I would be able to crawl out of bed the next morning was a good question. At a split in the passageway, Adams turned left toward her cabin and I turned right. But then I spun around when Adams exclaimed, "What the hell?" That passageway was only 6 meters long, and it contained 2 cabins at the end, one on each side. The door to Adams's cabin was open, and clothing was strewn all over the floor of the passageway and into the cabin. Clothing. Women's clothing, like lacy underwear, including a pink thong. Yes, I am her commanding officer. I am also a guy. A young, dumb guy. I stared at a collection of lace underwear, mouth open, until Adams cleared her throat loudly. "I am a woman, sir." She gave me a look that told me I would be in serious trouble if I hadn't outranked her. "Sorry, Ma—" Damn, I almost used her first name. I looked up at the ceiling to avoid seeing her unmentionables. "Sergeant, what happened here? I assume this isn't you doing spring cleaning." "No, sir. And these clothes are all clean. I wore that shirt," she pointed to a red USMC t-shirt, 2 days ago. "I put this stuff in the usual hamper and a bot took it away like usual. Or I think a bot took it away. The hamper was empty last night." I poked my head through the doorway, hoping I would not see anything Adams didn't want me to see. Other than clothes on the floor and drawers open, the place was as squared away as I expected. This isn't just some cleaning bot dropping stuff on its rounds. The damn thing took all clothes out of your drawers also. "Hey, Skippy."
"Hey, Joe, what's up?"
His voice sounded distracted. "Can you give me a minute? I'm programming options for the jump drive into the navigation system."
"This will only take a second. Did one of the laundry bots go haywire down here?"
"Oh, for crying out loud, you can't wait one minute."
"Huh. Damn it, Joe, what did you do? If this was you pulling a practical joke on Sergeant Adams, it is really lame. She is not going to be happy about you touching her panty—"
"I did not touch her panty, Skippy, or anything. There are clothes all over the floor here, and we didn't do it. I can see there are clothes scattered about."
"Hmm. This is odd. Those clothes are clean. I can tell from the nanotags I used to track them. They were washed, and they should have been folded and put away. My last record of them is—" "Hmm. Huh.
Uh-oh. Aha! So one of your bots did go crazy," I said, happy for the opportunity to point out a screw-up by Skippy. "Can you fix the laundry bot?"
"Joe, the bot wasn't the problem. As you know, I am operating at reduced capacity, and because I am burdened with fixing ship systems you idiot monkeys screwed with, I am more distracted than usual. What happened is I lost track of that laundry bot, and it didn't know what to do. Sorry about that."
"We understand you are doing a lot of work behind the scenes, Skippy. Sergeant, I avoided her eyes. "I am officially offering to help you pick up your clothes because I am hoping you will say no."
"You got that right, sir," she said as she dropped a pair of uniform pants on a trail of underwear, covering them up.
"Then I will leave you to straighten this up, and we can hope no other bots—"
An icy chill ran up my spine to make my hair stand on end.
"Uh-oh. Skippy, did you lose control of any other bots?"
"Hmm. It looks like the problem was just with that one laundry bot, Joe. It also made a mess of one of the Rangers' cabins. Is there some other more important bot you forgot about, like bots doing important maintenance on some critical system?"
"What? No, of course not, you dum-dum. I have—"
Uh-oh. "Oops. Oh, shit. Oh, shit?" I shared a fearful look with Adams.
"Oh, shit like what?"
"Oh, shit like there may be a teensy-weensy problem with one of the reactors." "Nothing to worry about. Hey, Joe, on a totally unrelated subject, this might be a good time to practice emergency evacuation procedures."
"Evacuation?"
"Uh-huh. You know, like abandoning ship. Now would be a great time to do that. Now."
"Oh, shit, now. Move, Joe. Move, move, move!"
Ripping the Z-phone off my belt, I shouted into it. "This is Bishop. All hands abandon ship. This is not a drill. All hands abandon ship."
Immediately, Chotek and Chang called me at the same time, and I put them on speaker as I urged Adams to run on ahead of me down the passageway. We were headed toward the closest dropship docking bay. Chotek spoke first.
"Colonel, can you please tell me what is going on?" he asked in his most condescending voice.
"Skippy says there may be a problem with a reactor and we should get away from the ship until he can fix it," I blurted out. Chotek's voice changed from condescension to disbelief.
"We are in interstellar space. What good would it do for us to float around in dropships if the ship explodes?"
Chang agreed.
"That does sound like a slow death.
I would prefer to go quick," Skippy interrupted.
"If one reactor melts down," he explained frantically, "I might still be able to salvage the other reactor, but the radiation would kill you monkeys. Get away from the ship until I know if I can fix the problem."
To Chotek's credit, he did not hesitate.
"On the way to my designated docking bay," he announced shakily, which I assumed meant he was already running down a passageway.
The forward part of the ship was in less chaos than I expected. People were running, but no one panicked. That is one major advantage of having an elite, supremely disciplined crew. When I got to my assigned docking bay, the big Theran and Condor dropship was already warming up, and people were filing quickly up the open back ramp. No sooner had my feet clattered on the ramp when Skippy announced over the intercom, "We're good. No need to abandon ship. Everything is cool, I think."
"You think?" I whispered harshly into my Z-phone.
"Give me a moment.
Yep, we're good.
No problem." Damn, that was a close one. "Joe, you really should have notified me earlier there was a problem with the ship's bots, you dum-dum."
"Me?"
"Yes, duh. I told you I was extremely busy programming the jump drive nav system. Also, Joe, the crew's performance on this abandoned ship drill was shamefully slow. If this had been a real emergency, we..."
If...
"Did you lose control of the reactor or not?"
"I can neither confirm nor deny any such outrageous allegations, Joe, but I am shocked and hurt that you would accuse me..."
"This is bad, Skippy." "Yeah, it is kind of embarrassing. We should keep this between us, huh?"
"Between us?"
I looked around the rear compartment of the Condor where a dozen people were awaiting orders from me. Silently, I gave them a thumbs up, then pointed toward the ramp.
"I just ordered the whole freaking crew to abandon the ship.
Everyone knows."
"Well, that was bad planning."
"You shouldn't have panicked, Joe."
"Ah, the crew got to train for emergency evac, so all's well that ends well, right?"
I didn't answer him other than to flip a middle finger at the front camera of my Z-phone.
No harm, no foul.
Come on, Joe, work with me here. I'm running out of cliches.
Skippy.
I didn't know what else to say. There was no point to shouting at him.
"Listen, Skippy, you are overworked right now. You're still fixing the ship while you are adjusting to your new, circumstances." I didn't want to say reduced circumstances. He knew what I meant.
"Would it help if I call a 24-hour stand-down so you can catch up on critical maintenance stuff?"
"Totally unnecessary, Joe, and doing that will delay us finding the conduit I need. The clock for 0 hour doesn't pause while I'm fixing the ship. Although, if you insist on a stand-down..."
"Oh, I do insist," I replied with as much sarcasm as I could muster as I trudged back down the Condor's ramp feeling like a total idiot.
"Then 48 hours would be better."
"Okay, 40, maybe 72 hours.
"All right. How about you monkeys relax and I'll tell you when I'm done, if you insist."
"Deal." The crew would not be happy about more enforced idleness, but after the latest fiasco, they would understand. On the way back to my cabin for the shower I still needed, I passed by Adams, who was picking up the last of her clothing off the floor of the passageway.
"Sergeant?"
"Yes, sir."
"You take care of those panties. They just saved our lives."
"Yes, sir," she laughed.
Hans Chotek was waiting for me outside my cabin, arms across his chest and his face red. The red was not only from anger. He was out of breath from running during the aborted evac procedure. Chang was with him, with Chang providing a calm, steady presence.
"Colonel, what happened?" Chotek demanded.
"The short answer, sir, is we got visited by the screw-up fairy."
"What?"
Chotek's face grew even more red.
"Ah,
Chang nodded with understanding. Chotek looked to Chang with a raised eyebrow.
Since you apparently know what that means, please explain.
That is an American expression, but we have similar sayings in China. It refers to a series of innocuous events that cascade onto another until a dangerous situation is created.
Colonel Bishop, Chotek turned to me. I was still amazed that my Chinese second-in-command had used the word innocuous. Damn, he spoke English better than I did.
Well, Chang described it close enough. Skippy had maintenance bots working throughout the ship, and that was working fine. Then his attention was taken up by programming navigation options into the jump drive, and, well, he lost track of what the bots were doing. Without direct supervision, the bots working on a reactor did something wrong or failed to do something after they did another thing. Everything was going fine, sir, until one little thing changed and upset the apple cart. The screw-up fairy came in and did the one thing that the system couldn't tolerate. I finished with a shrug.
Is this also called Murphy's Law? Chotek finished.
If something can go wrong, it will?
Yeah, I guess so, I agreed.
We are going to stand down normal ship operations for up to 72 hours so Skippy can concentrate on maintenance and only maintenance. Plus revising my internal subroutines to function optimally under my reduced processing power and memory capacity, Skippy interjected. Shouldn't take more than 72 hours, unless, you know, it does.
72 hours of stand-down is 72 hours we are not devoting to our mission, Chotek stated, as if no one else had considered that fact.
Hey, Chocula, Skippy said peevishly. You don't need to remind me that we're working on a deadline. 0 hour is my deadline, as in literally dead if I can't defeat the worm before then. Joe is right. I rushed into full operations too soon, and I still have not adjusted to working in a tiny corner of my substrate. I need to bring the ship up to speed and learn to work with what I have before we can go flying off on a dangerous mission.
Chotek looked to me, but I had said everything I needed to, everything that could be said. Our fearless mission leader needed to find a way to deal with the facts.
Very well. 72 hours. Please keep me informed of your progress, Skippy. Colonel Bishop, you will need to find ways to keep the crew busy in the interim. They do not deal well with enforced idleness.
Yes, sir. I grimaced. Crap, he was right. Damn it, I needed to assign someone to be the ship's morale officer, to keep everyone busy and their spirits up. That was a thankless job on any ship.
Here's a suggestion if you need something to keep the crew busy, Skippy spoke up unhelpfully. Conduct emergency evac drills. The crew's performance on this last drill was shamefully slow. It's a good thing we didn't have a reactor on the razor edge of exploding. That you know of. Forget I said that last thing, okay?
All I could do was roll my eyes as Count Chocula glared at me.
24, then 48 hours went by, and Skippy was still working on getting the ship restored to full operation and adjusting himself to his new circumstances. There were some glitches along the way, like when artificial gravity totally cut out with less than 2 seconds of warning. At that moment, I was running flat out on a treadmill and barely managed to hold on to a railing with one hand before my flailing legs would have sent me rocketing off the belt and onto the opposite wall. That was the most serious incident. Although there were others, like at 0434 the second morning when the crew was treated to Louie Louie blasting out of speakers all over the ship.
Skippy, what the hell?
Oh, crap, you heard that?
Sorry.
The music cut out. This is hopeless. Totally freaking hopeless anyway. It suddenly struck me that the music had not been Skippy's voice wobbling off key. It was the original song.
What's hopeless?
Well, I was testing my processing ability to see how well I am coping with my current reduced capacity. Even with restricted throughput, I am capable of crunching hundreds of zettabits of data through each of millions of channels simultaneously. So I decided I would try tackling one of the galaxy's greatest computational challenges to test myself.
What's that?
Deciphering the lyrics to Louie Louie by the Kingsmen. To work up to that task, I started with Michael McDonald. He was the singer for the Doobie Brothers. That joker was not exactly the king of enunciation, if you know what I mean. After I had my fill of that crap, I tried Bob Dylan. Brilliant songwriter,
but damn, what a marble mouth, Singer. After revising my computational model 14 quadrillion times, I was able to understand 83% of Dylan's songs, except his live albums. Those are a lost cause. Truthfully, even to get to 83%, I did a lot of guessing. When I was ready, I tried the ultimate challenge. Louie Louie. And? It's hopeless, Joe. Completely unintelligible. Nobody knows what they were singing. Still a great party song. It is probably better with tequila. The more tequila you drink, the better it sounds. Trust me, if you drink enough, the lyrics are totally understandable. I will have to trust you about that, Joe. Hey, how you doing? Other than the Louie Louie thing. Okay enough. He sounded depressed. What matters is I will not need more than 72 hours to bring the ship up to full operational status. As full as it can be right now, I mean. And I estimate there is about 6 hours remaining before I complete rationalizing my internal workings. No more music waking us up in the middle of the freaking night, I hoped. No more unexpected anything from me, Joe. The music tonight happened because I was using a subroutine that hasn't yet been rationalized. It won't happen again. I threw a pillow over my face and mumbled, "Good night, Skippy." Sweet dreams, Joe. From any display on the ship, or any tablet, laptop, or Z-phone, anyone could get an external view of the ship. When we had people outside in suits practicing maneuvers, or dropships were flying around close to the ship, we could access that view also. But sometimes I wanted to see the ship, see the old-fashioned way with photons bouncing off the hull and being picked up by my eyes. Because portholes were a weak point in the ship's structure, there weren't many of them on the Flying Dutchman. One place that had portholes was the rear of the forward hull. The portholes there were intended for emergency use when ships were attaching to the hardpoint docking platforms. Even the proudly and stubbornly cyborg Theranin, who liked to control the entire ship through cybernetic brain implants rather than physically touching buttons, levers, and switches, understood the need for a backup control system that could not be hacked or interrupted. When starships were attaching to or detaching from a star carrier's hardpoint docking platforms, some unlucky Theranin was required to unplug from the ship's network and use his or her eyeballs to assure some idiot navigator didn't crash into another ship, or worse, the star carrier itself. Anyway, those portholes were a good place for me to relax and get away from the crew for a while. To access them, you had to climb up a tube that was sized for Theranin. They also gave a decent view, a real non-digital view of space, the stars, and the ship aft of the forward main hull. At the top of the tube was a small, low-ceiling platform, and it was kind of a pain climbing up the cramped tube that had handholds placed too close together. I usually skipped every other handhold, and every single time I had to remind myself not to climb too quickly or risk bashing the back of my skull on the tube. My favorite porthole was the one closest to my office, which was still a long walk. When I got there, I used the manual unlocking mechanism. The regular latch was designed to be controlled by thought through a Theranin cyborg implant. "I wouldn't do that, Joe," Skippy warned me through the Z-phone on my belt as my hand grasped the handle. "Huh? Why not?" "Sergeant Adams is currently using the viewing platform, and she is, not alone, if you know what I mean. She's with that cute French paratrooper who she..." "Ah, damn, Skippy, I do not need details, please." "Okie dokie, Joe. I can tell you are sensitive about the subject. The women aboard this ship seem to find the men of the French team to be quite desirable. It may be that paratroopers are considered dashing, or when they speak French, it is..." "Hey, I'm a paratrooper. I'm a freaking space paratrooper. Nobody has more space diving time than I have, and I can speak French. Joe, you know some choice swear words and Quebec-style French. That is not the same as being able to speak the language. You barely speak English. As you did not attend formal paratrooper training, you are not..." "Yeah, yeah. Whatever." I didn't want to continue a conversation about how other men in the merry band of pirates were considered cooler than me. It did please me to know Adams was enjoying a normal human activity. I had been worried about her ever since I broke her out of the Cristang jail where we had all been held awaiting execution. While I was in that jail, I had slept on a cold, hard floor, and food had been sparse. The women prisoners on Paradise had been treated much worse, as the Cristang soldiers could not stand the idea of a female disobeying them.
Female prisoners were fed less often than men, if they were fed at all. Adams, Desai, and the other women had been tortured. I had seen ugly scars on Adams's neck back before she pulled on the uniform top I brought. Since they joined the Merry Band of Pirates, their physical injuries had been tended to by the magical medicine of Dr. Skippy, and he assured me the two women were fully healed. Fully healed physically, that is. Military psychologists on Earth had cleared Adams and Desai for duty, and I had not talked with them about what happened in that jail. Unless the after-effects of their ordeal affected their fitness for duty, it was none of my business how they were coping emotionally. Still, it was nice to know Sergeant Adams was engaged in a normal, and I assume healthy, relationship. Although one thing bothered me. People had plenty of places aboard the Dutchman for romantic activities, and those lucky couples didn't need to confine themselves to their tiny cabins and two short beds, but common courtesy required busy couples to give notice to avoid someone awkwardly stumbling onto them. Damn it. I'm happy Adams is having fun, but they should, like, hang a sock on the door latch there. Let people know this porthole is occupied. A sock? Skippy asked, surprised. They did loop a necktie over the handle. I thought that was the paratrooper being too lazy to carry it back to his cabin. Under my direction, one of my maintenance bots just picked up the necktie and is bringing it to be clean. Skippy, come on. Bring it back. Doing that now, Joe. Wow, have I been screwing things up for a while? I had no idea hanging a sock over a door handle meant something to you humans. Your secret informal communications methods can be way too freaking complicated. Sorry, Skippy, someone should have told you. All adult humans know what that means. You and your bots are not the intended audience. All right, I will go to the porthole on the port side, deck 3. Unless that one is also occupied. That porthole is currently empty, Joe. There is an amorous couple in the back of a cargo hold near... Do not need to know, Skippy. I do not need to know. Thank you very much. Was everyone on the ship other than me getting laid? That was an incredibly depressing thought. I mean, I am a healthy young guy. People talk about the loneliness of command, but they never mention the horniness of command. The women aboard the Flying Dutchman were the only women within 800 light years, and they were all off limits to me. That totally, totally sucked. Thinking about that had me in a sour mood by the time I climbed up to the porthole viewing platform, even though I had not bumped my head even once in that claustrophobic tube. Remembering why I went to the porthole, I looked out and... Damn, Skippy? This porthole is so dirty I can barely see through it. Have your bots cleaned this thing recently? Yes, Joe, he answered defensively. Really? I used the word really in the tone my mother hated when my father did it, because it implied the other person was so dumb you had to question their actions. It doesn't look like it. I would have done a better cleaning job if I had spit on this porthole and smeared it around with my butt cheeks. Ah, Joe, now I will need to purge several gigabytes of memory to get that image out of my mind. Yes, okay, fine. It has been a while since I had a bot up there to clean that porthole, and you monkeys have been getting grubby fingerprints on it and breathing on it, so excuse me if my bots have been busy with more important things, like fixing all the idiot crap you ignorant apes did to the ship while I was away on vacation. Maybe just in case something happens to me again, I should put post-it notes all over the ship with "Danger, do not touch." Even that would be too complicated, because it requires you morons to read. Seriously, what part of me saying you humans should never, never, ever screw with major shipboard systems did you not understand? We didn't have a choice, Skippy. You left us to ourselves, and do not say I should have trusted the awesomeness to come back to us. The awesomeness would still be trapped at the bottom of a beer can if Nagatha hadn't gone in there to get you. Whew, boy, I don't need you to tell me that, Joe, because Nagatha reminds me every 2 freaking nanoseconds. She's all like, you should be nicer to the monkeys, or this was all your fault, so you should take responsibility for fixing this mess. You disagree with her? No, he grumbled miserably. I do know our current situation is all my fault. That doesn't mean I enjoy being nagged to death about it. If it makes you feel any better, the idea of her constantly nagging you is a great source of joy to me. That does not make me feel better, Joe. Suck it up, Buttercup. Okay, I deserve that.
I'll drop the subject, I said as I tapped the dirty porthole.
Skippy, this bothers me. Are your bots really too busy to keep things properly clean?
Most of the bots he used for maintenance were designed to perform a wide variety of tasks, but I knew the Theranon had some bots specifically tasked to keep the ship clean. Unlike most systems aboard the Flying Dutchman, the cleaning bots were never intended to require direction from a cyborg Theranon. Performing heavy maintenance on reactor containment systems was a task Theranon wanted to direct through cybernetic brain implants. Scrubbing floors and any icky thing that involved plumbing were tasks the Theranon allowed the ship's computer to handle entirely on its own. That is why I was bothered that Skippy was apparently unable to keep up with a routine cleaning schedule. He should have been able to delegate cleaning to a small part of the ship's computer.
My cleaning bots are not the problem, Joe, he sighed.
Yes, I have been forced to take apart some of the cleaning bots to provide replacement components for more important bots. But the real problem is me. Since I came back, I have loaded part of my consciousness into the ship's computer. The section of my canister I partitioned off to protect me from the worm is too low capacity for even my reduced functioning. Squeezing part of me, and Nagatha, into the Dutchman's crappy processors has required me to wipe out almost all the native operating system. That means the ship's computer is not capable of handling routine tasks on its own, including directing simple cleaning bots.
Oh, damn. I didn't know that. Would it help if the crew took over some basic maintenance tasks for now until you were fully recovered?
No? No, thank you, but that is not necessary, Joe. I have been rewriting my, you would call it internal software, for improvised efficiency of my current operating capacity. Within 8 hours, the process of rationalizing my software should be complete, and I will be able to resume normal shipboard operations as far as you are concerned. Until then, I have concentrated on bringing all vital ship systems back to full operation, or as full as they can be for now.
Ah, I get it. Your full awesomeness is too great to be contained in the tiny space available to you now, I said with sarcasm I was confident Skippy wouldn't recognize. And he didn't.
Exactly, Joe. Truly, this entire universe is too small to contain my awesomeness, but I do what I can.
We appreciate it, Skippy. Tell me, in your, temporarily reduced state of awesomeness, can you run the ship by yourself?
Please, easy peasy, Joe. Just because I can't do magical Skippy things like creating micro wormholes does not mean I can't handle simple reactors and programming the jump drive navigation system. I could do that in my sleep.
I'm sure you could. One last question for you. I had to be back in my office to meet with Major Sims in 15 minutes. Since you erased most of the ship's operating system, what happens if you, go on vacation again?
Nothing good. Without me, almost every system on this ship would go into emergency shutdown, and no way could your science team get anything important working again.
That's not good.
I know that, Joe.
Is there some sort of compromise, like you leave enough of the ship's operating system in place to keep stuff like a reactor running for a short time, and give us a chance to hang on until you return?
Not possible. Even with me taking over every exabyte of memory this ship's pathetic computer has available, I am dangerously on the edge of collapse. I have even had to use most of the lifeboat's computer to store part of my functioning. Reviving me gave me a shot at fully recovering, but it also means fixing myself as the only possibility of restoring this ship to full functioning. It's all or nothing now, Joe. Either we find a conduit so I can go around the worm and kill it, or the worm gets me and the ship dies with me.
Damn. Ah, shit, I kind of figured that anyway. Also, Joe, if I do go on vacation again, it will not be temporary. It will be permanent. There is really no point to making plans for keeping the ship running if something bad happens to me. It is clear your science team is not capable of maintaining even emergency shipboard systems without me.
Uh-huh, I figure that too, I said with a sigh so deep my breath fogged the porthole in front of me.
Skippy. The Merry Band of Pirates runs into way too many situations where there is only one possible course of action for us. Chotek is right. We need to develop a long-term strategy so we're not just constantly reacting to the latest crisis.
I am all for that idea, Joe. We can get right on that long-term strategy after We do the only thing we can do right now, which is locating a conduit. Technically, you can get right on developing a long-term strategy. We have demonstrated many times that thinking outside the box is your strength, not mine. You are that pain-in-the-ass senior officer who dreams up the big-picture strategy, and I am the grunt who gets stuck implementing whatever impractical bullshit you pull out of thin air. You're the grunt, I asked, surprised. Joe, I know you still like to think of yourself as a boots-on-the-ground guy, but you are now the asshole senior officer who sits safely behind a desk while your people risk their lives trying to carry out whatever idiotic plan you slap together. Thanks, Skippy. I had come up to the porthole to get a couple minutes of peace and quiet, a pleasant break in my stressful day. Instead, Skippy had only reminded me how lonely I was and how thoroughly desperate our situation was. This has been a depressing conversation all around.
Why is that, Joe? You didn't have great luck with the ladies on Earth before the Ruhar invaded, so your current lack of companionship is nothing new. And the merry band of pirates has been fighting against impossible odds since you broke out of jail on Paradise. Like Major Smythe says, kicking ass and saving humanity against impossible odds is just what you pirates call Tuesday. That made me chuckle.
Yeah, I guess that's right.